I'm Matt Katz, in for Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. The national conversation around racial justice is calling for police accountability throughout the U.S. Now a new investigation highlights questions of accountability in another branch of the criminal justice system, the courts. Across the country, thousands of judges have track records of unethical or illegal behavior while on the bench. Yet the majority of those who have been investigated and found to be guilty of misconduct continue to serve. That's according to a year-long investigation from Reuters. In the past 12 years, thousands of judges have only received slaps on the wrist for misconduct that has left thousands of people to suffer the consequences of their actions. I spoke with Michael Behrens, an investigative reporter for Reuters, on their year-long investigation documenting instances of judicial misconduct throughout the U.S.
What we endeavor to do is to quantify the situation. So when I began with one state, let's take New York, for instance. It's a very transparent state when it comes to judicial misconduct. They have a wonderful website, and you can go look up all the judges who've been adjudicated or found to have committed an ethical breach or, you know, a violation of law. And in other states, we found absolutely zero information publicly available or readily available. And that's when we started getting more and more interested. Like, some states do a good job, some states don't. And we started counting up, well, how many judges each year have been found to have committed some level of misconduct? And the numbers started to become staggering. You know, first it was dozens and hundreds and thousands.
Wow. So give us an idea of the type of misconduct we're talking about. Is it personal actions related to their work as judges, both?
It's a vast array, but what we focused on in this first story are judges who committed misconduct who stayed on the bench. And let me give you a sample. I mean, we focused on a Utah judge who was texting pictures of male private parts to his clerks, a Texas judge who burst into a jury room on a sex traffic case and told the jury that God had told him that the defendant was innocent and that's the way they should go. There's a California judge who had sex in his chambers with female attorneys. There's a New York judge who was berating domestic violence victims. A Maryland judge who had gotten busted for DUI, for drunken driving, and his condition was so bad that every day before he took the bench, he was required to take a breathalyzer. And then a Tennessee judge who signed an order that would allow women out of jail early if they agreed to a surgical birth control implant, and for the men, if they would get a vasectomy. And so what we found is that all these judges returned to the bench despite these infractions. And overall, what we found is that 9 of every 10 judges who are adjudicated or found to have committed misconduct are allowed to return to the bench.
And we're talking total, like, thousands of judges here that we're speaking of that you looked at.
Yes, and the way we got to thousands is, you know, one of our surprising findings is we found 1,509 judges who had been publicly disciplined. But what really astounded us is we found 3,613 judges who had been privately disciplined across 38 states. And this opened up a whole new realm for us that states were privately disciplining judges for serious infractions at times and not telling the public anything about it.
And now on the flip side, you have victims of this misconduct. Can you tell us about the victims, the people who are harmed by the actions of these judges?
I'm glad you asked about that, because I think that is one of the most important aspects of what we tried to bring to light. Is while we focus on the actions of the judges, and that's what makes the headlines, often very little attention is paid to the people who were hurt by these actions. So of the 1,509 public cases, we compiled documentation for each and every case, and then we poured through it trying to determine if there was a way to find out how many victims were impacted. Of those cases, we did identify 5,206 victims, people who suffered as a consequence. People who were unlawfully jailed, people whose cases languished for years and their children stayed in foster care. And we found that that really became sort of the social mission of the story, was to give voice to these victims.
Can you share us the story of Marquita Johnson and her experience in Alabama?
So Marquita is a Black woman in Montgomery, Alabama. She's living in a neighborhood, in an impoverished neighborhood, and the police set up roadblocks in the neighborhood. They're pulling people over for everything. And according to the people we talked to, When they got stopped, they would not just get one ticket, they would get two or three tickets. They called it stacking. And although each ticket was not that expensive, the court levied, you know, $100 to $150 court cost on every ticket. So a single traffic stop could easily cost you $500. In Marquita's case, she racked up some tickets trying to take her kids to school, trying to go to the store, and she fell behind. She owed thousands of dollars to the court. What's tragic about Marquita is she went to the court and said, I've just lost my job. I need more time to pay. And instead, a judge there sentenced her to 496 days in jail for failure to pay traffic tickets. This is a woman who's never committed a crime. Her only infraction, if you want to call it that, was failure to pay a traffic ticket. 496 days in jail. And the conditions in the city jail was horrific at times. What they made the prisoners do labor to work off their fines, you know, cleaning up blood, you know, in cells and washing police cars, even cleaning the courtrooms. And the irony is that the time that she got for failure to pay a traffic ticket exceeded the jail time that Alabama allows for negligent homicide. I mean, this is how unfair and unequal the system is.
And what happened to the judge? The judge got away with just exacting this punishment on this woman for traffic violations?
He didn't get completely away with it, but he went right back to the bench after he was chastised for breaking state and federal laws, for basically breaking every ethical oath, you know, that every judge takes. And this was the irony. Judge Hayes had spent a decade on the bench and had jailed countless Marquita Johnsons. The stories are just legion. But when complaints were filed against him and when he finally was suspended for 11 months, when he came back to the city, they hired him right back in a very contentious city hall meeting. Black residents are appearing before city council and say, you cannot hire this guy back, you know, not after everything he's done. And the city hired him right back.
Who's in charge of oversight here in these in various jurisdictions? Who's in charge of investigating and disciplining judges accused of misconduct?
Every state has what's called a judicial oversight agency. Sometimes they're called commissions. Every state has a different name. And these state agencies or commissions receive complaints about judges, investigate those complaints, and then there's a process for initiating action against judges. The irony is that most of the disciplinary actions are little more than written warnings. Sometimes they're called a reprimand. Sometimes they're called a censure. Sometimes they're called an admonishment. But it's little more than just a piece of paper that says, please don't do this again. But at least there is a process that most people aren't aware of, that you can file a complaint against a judge. And it's supposed to be investigative. It's a valid complaint.
Do you have any revelations after working on the story for about a year, just about the criminal justice system and about how we select and elect and appoint judges in this country?
Wow, that's a huge can of worms, you know, a huge debate on election versus appointment.
Sure.
And I don't have, I think, any significant insight into whether an appointed judge or an elected judge is a better thing. I think there's a lot of valid issues about elections and judges who are beholden to campaign financing and to donors. We saw a lot of violations involving judges with campaign violations and conflicts of interest. So that certainly does raise a lot of issues. I think the issue that sort of popped out to me wasn't something that was consistent, but it was the inconsistency of the justice system. I mean, you take New York, for instance, you've got full-time judges, you've got part-time judges, you've got thousands of judges in New York who don't have law degrees, which I found amazing. I didn't realize it was so easy to become a judge in so many different jurisdictions. And then you have public discipline and you have private discipline. New York, from what our calculations are, has hundreds of cases of private discipline. Many states say, you know, we reserve private discipline for our most minor cases that don't deserve, you know, full public airing. But we have to take the word of the state for that. And some states, you know, I think we've been able to show aren't as faithful to that. You know, in New York, you also have judges who are allowed to resign or retire and their investigation is stopped. And this is common across the country as well. But I think we found 191 judges in New York who agreed to leave the bench which prematurely shut down the investigation, also stunted public disclosure. So that's, I think, the surprising thing. Every state operates differently, but a lot of it's behind this shield of secrecy and silence.
Michael Behrens, investigative reporter for Reuters. Mike, thank you for your investigation, and thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for putting a light on this important information. Thank you.